The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Thank you, Lachlan. Well, let me show you a picture of my son. That's my son, Mitchell, and me, and we're on a holiday. And for Father's Day, my son and his preschool put together a card for me. And this is what the card said. Happy Father's Day. We asked Mitchell some questions about his daddy. Pretty safe. Question number one. What do you like to do with daddy? To which my son replied, watch AFL on TV and at the game. I feel like I've my legacy has been secured with my kids. Job done. Daddy, boo you, AFL is the best game. Come on. Last question number one. Question number two was this. What is your daddy good at doing? I was a little bit nervous about this question. And this is what my son said. Shouting at the TV when the Sydney Swans does bad things. And that was read out to the whole class and all the parents because it happened to be that my son's card was chosen to be read. To which I said, well played, Mitchell, well played. Now, one of the moments that gets me up and yelling at the TV is when a player gets tackled. He gets knocked down and I yell, quick, get up. Give us a second effort. Go to make it to the next contest. But of course, that's easier said than done. Because after each knock, you get the wind taken out of you. You're a little bit more sore, a little bit more bruised. You have less petrol in the tank. And so it's hard to make it to the next contest. And sometimes you just fall short. You don't make it at all. And that happens again and again. See, in life, when you keep getting knocked down, then life becomes a battle. When you keep pulling up short, it's hard to get back up again. And worse still, after each knock, you're more tired than you were before, which makes you more likely to fall short again. Well, welcome to Bible Shots. As Lachlan introduced, my name's Mark. I work here at City Bible Forum full-time. And over the last 3 weeks, I've been going through a series titled Unlocked, Maximizing Your Potential, where we've unlocked three different personality types. The first week, we looked at the perfectionist. Last week, we looked at the divergent. And this week, we are looking at the battler. What happens when in life you keep coming up short, not once, but again and again and again? When each setback accumulates, so you're more tired than before, and so more likely to fall short again. And what happens when your well-intentioned, well-meaning support just from the sideline just tells you, hey, you know what, just get up, work a bit harder, work smarter, battle a bit longer. And as you hear that, it just sounds a tad patronizing. So is there another way to draw out the best out of the battler than asking them to become a champion? Is there another way to draw the best out of this personality rather than asking them to become something that they're not? Because if there is a way, then the battler can be unlocked and the battler can find rest. They can catch their breath, whether they do well or whether they come up short. And from the outset, can I suggest that knowing Jesus is the key to unlocking this personality? So let's unlock the battler. And today's talk, we're dividing into three parts. Part one, we're going to define what a battler is. In the middle part, we're going to look at the advantages and disadvantages. And I'm going to outline one of each. And the final part, I'm going to ask the question, what difference does Jesus make if you are a battler? How does he unlock your personality? And how does he do it by asking you not to become something that you're not already? Well, let's go to the first part. Let me define a battler. Now, this is Kylie Tennant, and she's an author, an Australian author, who wrote a book titled The Battler. It's a fictional story in 1941. So that's in the middle of World War II. And this book is the book which captures the Australian spirit, the idea of what is a battler. And here's a quote from her book. "She was a battler," Snow admitted. "Impudent, hardy, cool. And she could take a knockback as though it didn't matter and come up and meet the next blow." See, if we were to define a battler, it would be this. A battler is a person who gets knocked down but keeps on going, often against the odds. And because they keep getting knocked down in life, that means they often fall short. See, they hope to be up here, but in fact, they only get to here. There's a gap in life. And so life is always about making up the gap, and it's very exhausting. See, whether you're a parent juggling full-time work and a newborn at home, and you look and see others who have the financial and family support, and they seem to be cruising through at life. Whether you're a university student, an overseas university student, who has to have full-time work and full-time study, and so just to pay the rent, you're flat out, and you see others who are, well, they're just cruising. Uni is a party. Or maybe you are a worker, where Monday to Friday, you just feel like you're getting knocked to and fro, back and forth, but you look at your peers, and they're just breezing through, getting promoted. See, can you identify with the battler? Can you see a gap in your life? Perhaps you feel like a battler today. Well, that's the first part. We're defined a battler. Let's go to the middle part of the talk. What are the advantages and disadvantages? Now, this is LeBron James. He's a professional American basketballer. But before LeBron James, there was Michael Jordan. He was the key person in the NBA. This is Mark Leong today. He's very old and jaded. But before that, there was a very young Mark Leong. And what happened was I got married, I got a job and had kids. That's the difference. Middle age happened. But when I was a lot younger, I watched a lot of basketball and my hero was Michael Jordan. I wanted to dribble like Mike. I wanted to shoot like Mike. I wanted to dunk like Mike. But there was one problem. And it was this. I was Asian, which meant I lacked one thing, which was height. I was short. And I remember in my kitchen, being in the kitchen and marking my height, and my growth spurt finally started. And I could see, oh, the gaps are growing. But then the gaps started to get smaller and smaller and smaller. And I'm thinking, please stretch, stretch, just go on for a bit longer. And it stopped. I came up short. No matter how hard I tried, I was always going to be this height. But I learned that that's okay, because my height is outside of my control. DNA has dictated that I'm going to be this size for the rest of my life. So rather than whinging and complaining, I learned resilience. I just had to get on with being this tall. And that is the advantage of a battler. They are resilient. They know how to keep going even when they're knocked down. They know what's in their control and, more importantly, what's outside their control. They're very much aware of that. And rather than whinging and complaining, they knuckle down and get on with the job, no matter the odds. If their life were like a muscle in a body, you would say they're battle-hardened and they're ready for action. They're resilient. See, there's dignity in being a battler. Well, if that's one advantage, there's also a disadvantage as well. Now, have you ever noticed how wireless earbuds have made pedestrians in Sydney just look a little bit crazy? Because you'll see these people walking down and they're just talking into the air and waving their hands around the street. And you're thinking, what's happening? So I was on George Street one day walking down and I saw a person waving their hands, talking to the air. I made eye contact with him and I thought, oh, he looked kind of familiar. And as I approached, I thought he wanted to shake my hand. And so I went out to shake his hand, but he had earbuds in. And so he was like, no, I don't want to shake your hand. I'm not talking to you. And so when I grabbed his hand, he gave me the evilest look, like, what are you doing? Trying to assault me? You're a stranger. I'm just talking. Why are you trying to grab my hand? See, when people wear wireless earbuds, you don't know who they're talking to, but you definitely know they're talking to someone. And that's the same with a battler. See, while you might not be able to see it immediately, a battler, by definition, is battling against something. They live in constant conflict. There is an enemy, an opposition, an axe to grind, and a point to prove. It might be against the rich. It might be against those who have it easy in life. It may be against the privileged. It might be against the government or the system. But for a battler, you might not know who it is, but there is always an opposition. Battlers live with a chip on their shoulder. Battlers assert their identity in opposition to something or someone. And if a battler's life was a little bit like a muscle, that maybe a battler's life now looks a bit more like a callus that you get in a gym. Because over time, as you get used to living in opposition, asserting your identity in opposition, that becomes ingrained. And become ingrained in a deep-seated contempt, an entrenched resentment, and I think a very fundamental restlessness in life. Because a battler is never at rest, because they always live in the battle, in conflict, in opposition to someone or something. And so they never experience peace. So we've defined what a battle is. We've now looked at the advantages and disadvantages. The advantages, they have resilience, but the disadvantages, they have no rest. So let's go to the final part of the talk. Let's look at how Jesus unlocks the battler. How might Jesus bring out the best in this personality? And we're going to do this by looking at how Jesus changed a group of battlers. Well, what we're going to do is now we're going to read a bit of the Bible. And this is a letter which was written in this part of the world, in the Middle East. If I were to take you back in time, it's the first century. And it's written by a Christian leader and Christian teacher called Paul. And he is writing to some other followers of Jesus. And as he writes, he's trying to help them see the impact and the difference Jesus makes to their life. He wants them to kind of understand and grapple with that. And so let's read this letter, a short section of this letter. This is what it is. It says, brothers, Paul's writing it, brothers, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards, not many were influential, not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. He chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. It is because of him that you are in Christ Jesus. Can you see who are the battlers here? Brothers, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. Is Paul trying to be mean? Is he trying to troll these people? No. That's not Paul's intention. All he's trying to do is just state the facts. He's reminding these early followers of Jesus of their history. And the majority of them were battlers. They fell short in life. Do you see, they didn't live up to the standard. In terms of wisdom, they were down here. In terms of power, were they up here? No, they were down here. In terms of heritage, noble birth, they were down here. They wanted to be up here, but they were down here. And so they knew there was a gap. So how does Jesus change this? What difference does Jesus bring? How does he unlock this group of people where they always seem to fall short in life? Well, firstly, as Paul understands the God of the Bible, he sees the God of the Bible using battlers to showcase a powerful truth. And let's read on. Not many of you were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. He chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. God uses these battlers to show that all fall short. In terms of our spiritual well-being, we're all battlers. No one can boast before God. And this is a comfort to battlers today because everyone is like them. We all have the same gap when it comes to God. No one is above them. And so the shame of being a battler is removed. God symbolically identifies with the battlers here. Because God chooses who? The weak, the foolish, and the despised. And says, look at their situation and learn. Because we all fall short. There all is a gap between us and God. See, the God of the Bible isn't one who is whose eyes are focused on those who are high achievers, who rank people because of their achievements and think, they're the ones who I should focus on. No, no, no. The God of the Bible isn't swayed by that. Instead, the God of the Bible, he doesn't ignore the battlers, but sits with them and says, look and learn. That's a powerful truth. But that's still not a complete answer, because how does God deal with that downside, that restlessness? How does he remove the chip on the shoulder that a battler has? How does he harness the resilience without the resentment that comes from living constantly in conflict? Well, let's go to the second powerful truth that Paul saw at play here. And it's this: so that no one may boast before him. It is because of him that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God, that is, our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Rather than leaving the battlers down here achievementless, yes, God can identify with them, but does God change them? Rather than entrenching their position, God actually now elevates their position in Jesus. God changes them. Did you see? How did they start off? Not many of you were wise, but now in Jesus, you're wisdom from God. Not many of you were influential. That's how they started off. But now in Jesus, they're righteous and holy. Another way of saying that is they're now ambassadors for truth and difference. They now can influence others. You were ones with no noble birth. But now in Jesus, you've become redeemed, part of God's royal family. Now you belong. And it's all because of what Jesus did at that first Easter. See, when a battler understands and takes Jesus on board in their life, rather than having to assert their identity in opposition, Jesus goes, hey, I'm going to give you a new identity. Rather than having a battler having to prove their wisdom, influence, and position, Jesus elevates them, bridges that gap, and says, I can remove the chip on your shoulder. Don't be resilient because you have to prove a point. Be resilient because it's good. And in fact, if you know me, you don't need to battle anymore, because you can rest with me. I can give you peace. Over the last 3 weeks, we've unlocked three different personalities: the perfectionist, the divergent, and the battler. And the key we've used is understanding the difference that Jesus makes to these lives. And if I put those three different personalities up, who would have thought that God would not only meet them where they are, but more importantly, show a better version of themselves, unlock them? And maybe if that has surprised you today, or maybe you're a bit more curious about how Jesus does this, today at lunchtime could be the nudge to take the next step and have a closer look at who Jesus is. Because if you do sit with Jesus, if you do meet him in the pages of the Bible, he can make a big difference in your life. Yeah, so I guess the question is for the battlers, because they live in opposition, can oftentimes be in opposition to authority figures. That's a very kind of postmodern take as well. How might if you were a follower of Jesus, how might you bridge that gap? How might you invite them? I think here we can take a leaf from Jesus and just see that he engaged people. Well, his first step was generally to engage people where they're at, rather than ask them to change for him. I think that's actually one of the truths in the Bible. If you meet the God in the page of the Bible, is he's the one who takes the first step out. Rather than asking people, you need to be a bit better, you need to get your life in a bit more order before I'll even consider. So I think that's the dynamic. And if we take the patron Jesus, Jesus kind of goes to these people where they're at. Similar, actually, Paul, the Christian, early Christian leader, has a very similar pattern as well. So I'd want to think, what is a safe space for any personality, battler or perfectionist, where they feel safe, they can be honest, they can be, share openly and, engage. And that will look different for each personality, I think. So, for example, it might be around a beer at a pub after work. Maybe that's the place to start the conversation, because that's where they feel they can. There'll be definite, and I guess as I look at myself, there are definite contexts where I'm not as open because I am aware of the surrounding than with others. So I guess that would be the starting point, and walk with them at their pace.
Yeah. Other questions?
Great question.
Mark, maybe you could share a little from yourself. You've shared in previous weeks that you identify as the different personality types we've been looking at. It's a bit of self-therapy for you. How are you the battler, and what difference has Jesus made for you?
Yeah, each time I've kind of shared a little bit. And to be honest, when I started preparing this series, I thought there were some personality types that I'm more definitely attuned to, particularly perfectionism, than others. But as I've read and I've realised what I thought was out there is actually closer to home. As I read bits of the Bible, I think, I definitely can resonate with that. And that's, I guess, a bit of a understanding that people are complex. We generally don't fit just one box. We cover multiple. So for me, as I was preparing and reflecting, and I think this made it into the series blurb, it's being a parent right now, being a parent to two young kids. I can see where I'd like to be and where I see other people parenting, and I see myself here. And I can see a gap. Now, there are various mental games that I can play with myself. Each child is different. There are different circumstances, different cultures. But I still feel that pressure. And I'm very aware that I seem to be falling short when it comes to parenting. What difference does Jesus make? Well, I think he does a couple of things. One, Jesus helps me to be at rest. So I realise, there is a gap, but there are certain things that are in your control and out of your control. And I think that's really healthy. So I can't change my kids. That's just not what I can influence. I can kind of put boundaries. I can kind of give them advice, but I actually can't change their character. And so that's really, really healthy for me. So some of the pressure gets taken off. But it still begs the question, if I can't, who can? That might be even more worrying. And that's where I think Jesus takes us a little bit further than helping us realise what we can control, how I can have resilience and rest. Jesus takes a bit further, because as you meet him in the pages of the Bible, he goes, Mark, you can't control everything and you can't control this about your kids, but you can know the one who does. Jesus goes beyond. You can ask more of Jesus that help you figure out how to be a better battler. You can actually ask Jesus to introduce you to the person who controls everything. And I think that's wonderful. A really tangible example of that for parenting is that my daughter, she's been learning the Lord's Prayer. And she calls, if you don't know it, goes, our Father in heaven. And that's a really powerful truth, because that means I don't have to be the perfect father for her. And actually, I can't be. And that's a great relief, and I can rest. But more importantly, she can actually know the perfect father. And actually, that now gives me confidence that even when I fall short, and I will, that she'll know a father who doesn't. And that's where I think Jesus makes a big difference in the way I parent. I can rest and I can watch knowing that there's a Father in heaven who knows my daughter and my son, and I can enjoy how he might change them. So there's still responsibility, but I can rest and go along for the ride as he changes me too.
Cool. Thanks, Mark.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.